Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth, everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant, responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Are you really buying a car online on AutoTrader right now?
Really?
At a playground?
Yeah, really. Look at these listings from dealers.
Wow, your search can really get that specific.
Really?
And you just put in your info and boom, car's in your budget.
Mom needs a second, honey.
You can really have it delivered?
Really? Or I can pick it up at the dealership.
Mom! One sec, sweetie.
Mommy's buying a car.
Mommy, look!
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Kyle, again? Really?
AutoTrader. Buy your car online. Really?
He will be retiring from the Mets broadcast booth. He'll remain with the team doing special events. And we are honored to be joined by the voice, the forever voice of the New York Mets, the great Howie Rose. Howie, first of all, congratulations and thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Evan. Thank you, Tiki. It's great to be with you.
No, it's great to be with you as well. We were talking right before you came on about how you must live for the moments. Some of them good. We played, you know, a bad one as well. Bad Met moment. But
they played the Luis Castillo clip. It was a brilliant call, Howie.
But it was the moment. So it made me start thinking, God, Howie must love moments. It's like the boring is, it's okay, but the moments are what you have to live for.
Can I pick your brain on that for a moment? Because I am the worst athlete of all time. It's so hard for me to do anything athletic when I'm involved in any kind of competition.
Yeah.
You, though, as a former football player at the highest level, have that innate ability. So I kind of feel that I get up for those moments the same as you probably did. Can you sense a correlation there?
No, without a doubt. You kind of know it's about to happen, but you don't know it's going to happen until it does.
Right.
But you're absolutely right. I love the moments that I had in my career, just like I'm
same
sure
here.
You love the moments that are forever in your Met calls and Ranger calls, as we heard
Islanders
earlier.
As well.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, we live for it. You know, I think any broadcaster who's blessed to do what I've been doing in terms of play-by-play, just looking at it through that narrow prism, would tell you the same thing. We live for the big moments, and some of us are just afforded them more frequently than others, you know, depending on things that are out of our control. But at the same time, man, they ratchet up a level of adrenaline that you don't feel most other days.
I mentioned this at the top when this announcement was made. There's two emotions I think the Met fan's going to have. One is pure selfishness. We're going to miss you. Like, I'm sad. I'm thinking of Howie not calling back games.
Thank you.
And selfishly, I'm like, this stinks. But then, obviously, we're very happy for you. What went into this decision, and when did you kind of come to this big decision?
Well, I've been tossing it back and forth in my mind for the last couple of years. I'm 72 years old now, so effectively when I retire, I'll be 73. And objectively, I would sit back and say, well, isn't that enough? I mean, most people are retired at 73. What gives me pause, though, and had given me pause for a while, is that for whatever reason, this business seems to breed, whether it's insecurity or just such a deep passion for what we do, that it's more difficult to let go than it probably is for most other people in their given and chosen professions. But, you know, I got to thinking a couple of things. Number one, I am sick and tired of coming home at night because we live in Florida now. You know, I'll be a New Yorker forever, but Florida's home now. And so when my wife is up in New York during the season, I come home 11:15, whatever, on an average night. And she'd be sitting there on her computer in the kitchen or the living room because we're just renting an apartment now. We sold our place in New York. And I'd say, so what'd you do tonight? Nothing. What'd you have for dinner? A bowl of cereal. And it's like, enough. I can't do this to her anymore.
Yeah.
There were so many years where I did hockey, full seasons of hockey and baseball concurrently. And you know, that takes a unique amount of sacrifice from any significant other and the family. And I've just had it with seeing that. And as I get older, I don't enjoy working at night as much anymore. Look, if you could parachute me into the booth at 7 o'clock and parachute me home 10 minutes after the end of the game, maybe we can go a little further, but that's not the way it works. And I also...
Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
Look, I've taken to saying that maybe the synapses don't fire as quickly as they once did, but as objectively as I can put it, I still think, you know, if I've lost anything off my fastball right now, it's just a tick or two, and I know how to compensate for that, but I don't want to hang around too long to where it's evident that whatever I was, I'm not, and I just don't want to go through that. So I think the time is right.
Well, just like Sean Manaea, you got a long reach. It doesn't matter that you're only hitting 88 on the
Sean Manaea, that's the guy.
He's long, He's long. But it's interesting you bring that up, Howie, because you still have it. It's not like, I don't know.
Thank you.
We don't feel the synapses not firing as fast or the cadence slowing down or the wit in real time. So when you leave the game, kind of similar to me, you know you have something left. Is that is that important to you?
Yes. Absolutely. Because I've seen guys hang around too long. I know what that sounds like. I know what that looks like. And it's amazing the little things that, you know, when you get to this point, sort of drive your memory. I don't know what the context was, but when I was doing the Islanders, and I honestly don't remember what season it was, but it was a long time ago. And I don't know even what the context was. We might have been talking about an announcer somewhere else who flubbed a call, and maybe it was one who was, you know, again, hanging around longer than he should have. And I remember my friend Chris Botta, who was the longtime PR director of the Islanders, saying to me, please promise me that won't be you. Promise me you won't stick around longer than you should. And it's crazy how that popped into my head just over the last few days.
Right.
So the bots, I guess I'm honoring you to an extent. But, you know, the long and the short of it is that I always felt that way. Rather leave a little too early than a little too late.
We're talking to the great Howie Rose. I would not begrudge you for this. I would actually want you to do this. But is there any part of you, because I heard the passion you have about calling this team winning a World Series, and God willing, it happens in 2026, you get to call it, you're on the steps of City Hall. Is there any part of you that says, though, hey, in 27, 28, I could come back and do the playoffs? Like,
oh, I would never do that.
You would never do that?
I would never do that because, you know, there will be two announcers in that booth, and if the line of succession carries through, that's going to be Keith and Pat. I would never do that to them. Once I'm out, if one of them need a break, you know, I'm not saying goodbye forever here, I hope, so that if there's an opportunity where one of them are away for a weekend or have another baby, because these kids are breeding pretty good right now, you know, if they need a pinch hitter for a game or a series, as long as it's in New York or Miami, then I'm good with that, you know? Because I still feel I'll have enough to get by, but I wouldn't elbow my way in there as the lead guy either. It would be akin to just making a guest appearance. I would love to do that, but without stepping on anybody's toes. When I retire, the gig then belongs to my successor or successors, and I would only be there as an ornament.
Yeah. Have you thought about what the Mets are going to do and what WFAN is going to do after you're retiring? And are guys coming to you?
Probably lock the door.
But are they coming to you for advice? I mean, we don't know who's going to. There's plenty of names to throw out there. But are your potential successors coming to you for advice?
Oh, I hope so. Because one of the things I have loved over the last 10 years or so, and I got this from Marv Albert, who even unknowingly just sort of passed it along over the years, with the mentoring that he did to and for me, that we have an obligation to pay it forward. And so I have so enjoyed, I guess it's been over the last 6 or 8 years, whether it was, you know, Wayne Randazzo was a full-time guy, or people who have come and gone in the booth just after, you know, relatively brief cameos. Like, look at Jake Eisenberg, for example, did a few games with us, and now he's one of the voices of the Kansas City Royals, and his career is going sky high. Of course, Wayne's the greatest example of all. We knew we weren't going to be able to keep him, and when he left to go to the Angels, you know, what did the mandate become? In my mind, once we got into the selection process, and I was blessed to be part of that, was let's go find the next Wayne Randazzo. And I think we might have found two of them, to be honest with you. And I'm just so, and I, again, I don't know if I have the right to be proud. I'm not their parent. I think parents have a right to be proud of their kids, right?
Well, you take ownership of it. You just, you feel it because you helped them get to the place where they're going. You know what I mean? So it is like a parent.
You know, Tiki, if I've had any role at all in helping them improve, then that's one of the most flattering things anybody can say to me, because I so strongly enjoy that role. And I also am obligated, I think, to do that. And so when you start talking about what are you going to do after you're done as a regular broadcaster, when I transitioned from radio to TV, when I went to the Islanders in 1995 on Sports Channel, they had the great Marty Glickman on staff as a coach. Literally, that was his job. And I was having trouble with one or two little mechanical things on television. For example, when we'd open the broadcast and we would do what's called the scene set, I'd be with my partner, Ed Westfall. We're setting that game up. When I asked Ed a question or brought him in, I was a little confused about, you know, what am I supposed to be doing here? Do I look at Eddie? Do I look at the camera? Am I, you know, just kind of roaming my eyes all over the place? What do I do? And Marty, in one sentence, changed all of that. He said, think of the camera as the third person in a three-way conversation. Brilliant. Presto. That did it. Right. Never had another problem with that again. And so I'd love to be able to impart some of that, whether it's wisdom or simply experience, to others. And that's a role I'd love to take on as we move along.
We're talking to the great Howie Rosen. You mentioned you've done a lot of different transitions, radio hockey, TV hockey, TV baseball, radio baseball. How was that adjustment going to radio from doing TV with the Mets, where now all of a sudden it's just different? Now you're painting the word picture, as Bob Murphy used to say.
Radio is so much more satisfying. And I'll tell you this, I might have said this to you before, but the first Met game I did on television was in the summer of 1995. And that's during the period when I was negotiating with the Islanders or with Sports Channel. And so they asked me if I'd fill in, because I think it was Hall of Fame weekend and Ralph wasn't going to be there and Rusty wasn't going to be there. So I worked in the TV booth and did play-by-play with Fran Healy. And please don't misunderstand this. And I don't say this to be arrogant or cocky, but I'd had enough experience doing baseball on the radio then so that when I walked out of that TV booth after doing a television game for the first time, I thought to myself, this is easy. this is like stealing, because you've got so much that's done for you.
That's right.
Basically, you know, you learn on television, just follow the pictures. The director puts it up and you respond to that. And that's great. And I love being part of an ensemble, but I relish the opportunity to kind of steer the ship, as you get to do on radio, something that you just can't do on television. They are equally enjoyable and rewarding, but there's nothing like radio.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah, and certain people are blessed with the gift of gab. And we were talking about how you at WFAN helped you become a really good broadcaster as well, because you can talk, right? It's you. Dead air.
I've heard that to a fault.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. It's necessary for your job, and it's a great thing. Even though some people could use it as a mocking thing, I think it's a great thing to be able to have a conversation, and that's essentially what you do in radio, even when you're doing play by play.
Well, thanks, Tiki. But I'll tell you what, it was a little bit of a curse at first because coming from a talk show background and morphing into a full-time play-by-play career, I had to learn to edit myself. I was told quite often early on that it's okay to use 100 words rather than 1,000 to say the same thing. And so between that, and as you guys know, the need when you're doing a talk show, not only to be personable, but opinionated.
Yeah.
You can't be a wet blanket on when you're doing a talk show. You've got to have opinions and you've got to be able to share them and be a little compelling and even controversial if necessary. That does not always mesh with what you have to do as a play-by-play announcer. And it took me a couple of years to kind of shake off my talk show sensibilities and just stay on the track that a play-by-play announcer needs to travel on.
I'm curious how much this means to you, if you remember it that well, because my dad told me he found an audio cassette he had taped you interviewing Tom Seaver the night he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, or I think it was when it was announced he was getting into the Hall of Fame. So he, as a listener, loved it. He found the tape. He's like, this is great. Do you remember that? Do you remember details of that?
It was one of my two most memorable nights on the air doing a talk show at FAN. And it's so complicated for me now when I think about Tom, because like so many others, he was my idol when I was a teenager. I mean, he broke in when I was 13, and I don't have to explain what Tom Seaver meant to the Mets and Mets fans. So, you know, he was a hero to me in the baseball vernacular. And then I got to work with him later on as a colleague, and through that became what I would consider a friend. That just kind of sort of blew me away. But I wasn't at that point yet when Tom retired and ultimately was elected to the Hall of Fame. I believe he went in what, 92?
92, yes. Yeah.
92. So he was elected with the biggest mandate in Hall of Fame history, 98.8% of the vote. And he agreed to come on with me the next night on WFAN. Now, it was only going to be for a half hour. And my awareness of Tom was that if he said a half hour, you're talking 30 minutes and then vamoose.
Right.
And so towards the end of that half hour, we played a compilation of his highlights over the music bed of Rod Stewart's Forever Young. It was brilliantly put together by Dove Kramer and Eric Spitz, if I remember right. And if I'm leaving anybody out of that production, I apologize. But my immediate reaction or memory is that Spitzy and Dove were the brains behind that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it was pretty emotional. And so when we came out of that, I was basically saying goodnight to Tom. He stayed on for another half hour.
Wow.
And it wasn't as though I had to ask. It was just sort of the stream of consciousness that he went into that allowed that night to continue twice as long as I budgeted. And we had a lot of other guests that night, you know, former teammates of his and such. And it was just such a remarkable night for me, never mind as a broadcaster, but as a fan. That was one. And the night that, sadly, Billy Martin passed away. Was obviously quite a spontaneous gathering of guests and information. And, you know, on a night like that, I saw the power of WFAN.
Right.
And, you know, Eric Spitz did such a great job producing that night, coming up with guests and people who actually were being, and I think Spitzy might have told Whitey Ford and Lou Piniella on the phone that Billy had passed. I mean, it's just unbelievable in terms of the emotions. And that night just, you know, reinforced how important WFAN was and is.
No, it is. It's a way for fans and even as commentators and broadcasters, ways to pay tribute to things that are important in real time. But you also gave a lesson about Tom Seaver. Stroke their ego, they stay for a lot longer, right? You just make them feel good. They're going to stay and keep talking to you.
I learned a little from that, right?
Yeah, it's not a bad lesson.
Know when and to whom to suck up.
That's right. Now, speaking of this current Met team, as you gave your announcement earlier today, it was about an hour and a half ago. You can rewind on the Odyssey app if you missed it. you kind of put some pressure on the Mets go win a championship so I can call it. It's my dream. Give me my dream before. Hey. Do you believe that this Met team has what it takes?
Yeah. In fact, after it became public, Mendy texted me and said, we're going to win it all this year. I said, I hope I didn't betray a confidence there, but I thought it was so cool that he said that, because I told him nothing would make me happier. You know, I've been hanging on for that, but I can't hang on much longer, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why I say, you know, when I step away, it's somebody else's gig, not mine. So there's a lot of pressure here. I felt that pressure in a different context once before. In 94, when the Rangers had their Stanley Cup run. And I'm sorry if I'm drifting into a stream of consciousness of my own here.
Sean just perked up at 94 Rangers.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, back then, my job with the Rangers was, you know, technically as Marv's backup. Hmm. And Marv did, you know, just 20, 25 games during the regular season, but he was going to be available to do games 5 and 7 of the final against Vancouver. But he insisted, and I'll always be grateful to him for that. It's just an incredibly kind gesture, because he didn't have to do it. But he insisted that I do play-by-play in the second period of Games 5, and as it evolved, Game 7. Game 6 in Vancouver, that was all mine. And that was my shot to make that call that I had dreamt of since I was 12 years old, you know? And I was an absolute nut that whole day in the hotel in Vancouver. I mean, I was bouncing off the walls. You know, I'd go work out in the gym on the treadmill, and I think I almost ran through the treadmill. And so I can't even imagine what nervous energy I would have if that opportunity would evolve this year in however many games it took, wherever and against whomever.
Right. Speaking of 1994, and I said this earlier to Tiki, I think that there were two calls in the history of New York sports that are on its own mountain. The Bobby Thompson, Giants win the pennant, Giants win the pennant, and obviously, Mateau.
What do you, like, were you conscious as it was happening? Like, is it one of those moments that you think back on and it's like, I don't know what was going on, because it was so amazing, and it's not something you can plan, obviously, because who knows how that game was going to end, especially with the way the Devils tied it with 7 seconds ago.
Right.
Take us through.
I thought I knew how it would end. Because after Zalapukin scored that goal, I'll tell you a quick story real quickly. I told Neil Smith, because I'd been friends with him for 15 years before he got the Ranger job, and he'd joke about it then. But, you know, I told him, and I used to tell Sal Messina, that for whatever reason, I don't know why, whether it was burning the mortgage in the Stanley Cup or driving the New York Americans out of Madison Square Garden, this team is cursed. They're jinxed. I don't know why. Oh, geez. They're never going to win, right? So now Zella, and I, but here's the most important part. I never, ever, ever said that on the air. I didn't feel that belonged on the air. Right. That was just between me and others. And so when Zalapukin scored that goal, they played the final 7.7 seconds. We throw to break. I take my headset off and I slam it down. If that was Madge's headset, he would have killed me right then and there.
Right.
Because I took it off and flung it onto the table. And I looked at Sal, and I mean, there was rage in my eyes.
I
looked at Sal and I said, now tell me that this bleeping team isn't cursed. And for the first time in Sal's life, at least as long as I'd known him, he was rendered speechless. He just looked at me and went, like that. Well, now, and I'm just thinking that whole first intermission, just get it over with quickly. I've taken enough daggers with this team over the years. Just don't draw this out. We know the Devils are going to just get it over with, all right? Just get it done. Well, they go through the first overtime, and now, stupid me, I'm getting optimistic again. All right, you know, one turnover, one play, one break. And then Mateau scores the goal, and I go berserk. And yes, you know, in the moment, I realized the enormity of that moment. I don't know what the hell I was saying, to be honest with you, because I've been trying to subjugate those emotions as best I could while the game was going on, but all hell broke loose,
right?
You know, verbally and in the stands when Steph scored the goal. And so now Sal takes over, and he's starting to run everything back and look at the replay and blah, blah, blah. And in the middle of nothing, in the middle of him talking, he just looks at me and says, there's your jinx for you, Rose. And I'm thinking, well, I know what that means, but nobody listening does. But it was just, it was one of those moments where you're having an out-of-body experience.
Right.
That's what it was. It was an out-of-body experience.
When was the last time you've heard that call?
I couldn't point it back to the day, but every week or two, somehow it pops up somewhere on social media where I'm linked to it. And I suspect it might pop up once or twice today somewhere.
Yeah, we've already played. It's going to pop up.
Is that a segue?
It's going to pop up right now.
There you go. Plays it cross ice into the far corner. Matto swoops in to intercept. Matto behind the net. Swings it in front. He scores! Matto! Defend Matto! And the Rangers have one more hell to climb, baby!
And there's so many. There's so much to that. One, the way you said score was just unreal. And then obviously the Matto. But the Mount Vancouver.
Yeah.
That, I mean.
There's a little story behind. Well, there's a little story behind that, naturally.
Hey, that's why we have you on.
You know, thank you. As the third period was into its last minute and they're winning 1-0. I said, okay, in my mind, I said, let me figure out how I want to do this. I wasn't going to come up with try to craft something poetic. I just wanted to say something succinct as the buzzer sounded and then let the crowd carry it just for a few seconds, because on radio, you don't have the luxury of letting that go on too long without providing context. So my plan was just to say, as the clock wound down to 3-2-1, all I was going to say is, and now there's one more hill to climb. Buzzer, crowd, then go back to talking. Well, Mr. Zalapukin ruined all of that. And so now my mind, as I was delivering that, flashed back to a game the Rangers had played in Vancouver that March, almost 3 months earlier. And that game, by the way, turned into a Donnybrook. It was great. Mike Keenan and Pat Quinn almost got into a fight behind the benches. Craziness happened in that game. But along the way, I remembered that we were on the bus going to practice the day before. Vancouver is so beautiful anyway, that I was just admiring all the sights. And I don't know why I swore that somebody was telling me, or I noticed a sign that said Mount Vancouver. I swore there was a Mount Vancouver. And then that popped into my head in the middle of all that post-goal hysteria. And I got people telling me, how'd you make that up? There's no Mount Vancouver. I said, what do you mean there's no Mount Vancouver? And I think somebody actually found it somewhere, that there is a Mount Vancouver. Might be in China for all I know. But I swear there's a Mount Vancouver somewhere.
Well, the metaphor was all that mattered. It didn't matter that there was no Mount Vancouver. It was the fact that they were climbing the next mountain, which was in Vancouver.
Yeah. And exactly.
That's awesome.
And they certainly did. So golf, is that what you're going to do with a lot of your spare time, Howie?
Well, if my club survived being thrown in the lakes at some point, you know, I just, it is what it is. As I said to Tiki before, I don't have any natural ability whatsoever. So it's hard for me to make progress. I've made very slow progress. You know, break 100, I'm happy. Play in the 90s. I'm trying to get under 90. And if I ever develop a short game, maybe. So, you know, instead of being miserable 6 months a year, now I'll be miserable all year. golf is the cure for a good mood.
Right.
When you play at my level.
That's well said.
Well, let us hope that there's no miserableness throughout April into deep October, and they get to send you out with a championship. Howie, we appreciate you coming on, and congratulations on retirement.
Most certainly. We will cherish this season with you making the calls to the Mets. Thank you, Howie.
I appreciate you both. Thank you, and thanks for this opportunity. Well,
I'm sorry, I have one last question. I apologize.
Sure.
We were arguing about geography before. Sean was claiming that Queens and Brooklyn are part of Long Island. To which I said, no, they're not. Like, geographically, sure, it's technically part of the island, but Long Island is Long Island, and Queens is Queens. And we all agreed that you could break the tie on this. So, what is it?
Queens and Brooklyn are not considered part of Long Island, whether topographically they might be. And I remember we had this discussion when the Islanders went to Barclays Center in Brooklyn for those few miserable seasons. They tried to sell it as, well, it's still Long Island. We're going to be in Brooklyn. No, it's not. It's Brooklyn and Queens. And Brooklyn and Queens, you're too young to remember this, Evan. You grew up on Long Island anyway, so it wouldn't have been an issue. But there used to be a Brooklyn-Queens Day, where we get off from school one day. And I believe it was on Brooklyn Queens Day when my friend and I were at Shea Stadium the day that they filmed the clip from the movie The Odd Couple, where they had Bill Mazeroski hit into the triple play. That scene was filmed at Shea, I believe on Brooklyn Queens Day in 1967, or else we just cut school and said to hell with it. We're going, right. We're going to the game anyway, right. Which is possible.
Very much. Howie, we appreciate it. Thank you, man.
Thank you, Howie.
Thank you, guys. We'll see you soon.
See you soon. The great Howie Rose, if you're just tuning in, he has announced that the 2026 Met season and baseball season will be his final year calling games. He'll still be a part of the Met family. All the ceremonies that take place, the Mets Hall of Fame, retirement of numbers, Howie will still be involved. But final season calling New York Mets baseball in 2026. And I never go into a season thinking my team's going to win a championship. I never have. Never once. Maybe 2026 feels different. Wow. Maybe this is the year.
Well, Mendy pulled a Namath, apparently.
That's right. Right. That's right, he did.
Everybody's on notice now.
Are you really buying a car online on AutoTrader right now?
Really? I can get super specific with dealer listings and see cars based on my budget.
Mom!
You can really have it delivered.
Or pick it up.
Mommy, look!
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Really?
AutoTrader. Buy your car online. Really?